Chapter 11. My next visit took me to number 2 crematorium, which was separated from number 1 by a path through some fields and by the Jewish unloading platform along the railroad tracks. It was built according to the same plans as number 1. The only difference I noted was that the space corresponding to the dissection room in number 1 was here used as a gold foundry. Otherwise, the layout of the undressing room, the gas chamber, the incineration room, and the living quarters of the SS and the Sonderkommando was exactly the same. It was to the foundry that all the gold teeth and bridge work collected in the 4 crematoriums were brought. All the jewelry and gold coins, the precious stones and platinum objects, the watches, the gold cigarette cases, and any other precious metal found in the trunks, the suitcases, the clothes, or on the bodies of the dead. 3 goldsmiths were employed here. First, they disinfected the jewelry, then sorted and classified it. They removed the precious stones and sent the settings to the foundry. The gold teeth and jewelry supplied each day by the 4 crematoriums produced, once smelted, between 65 and 75 pounds of pure gold. The smelting took place in a graphite crucible about 2 inches in diameter. The weight of the gold cylinder was 140 grams. I knew that figure to be exact because I had weighed more than one on an accurate scale in the dissecting room. The doctors who removed the teeth from the bodies prior to cremation didn't throw all the precious metal into the bucket filled with acid. For a portion, sometimes a fair amount, sometimes only a little. Went into the pockets of the SS guards when these morbid treasures were being collected. It was the same for the jewelry and gems sewed into the linings of the clothes and the gold coins left in the undressing room. In the latter instance, however, it was the Sonderkommando entrusted with the job of going through the luggage who profited. An exceedingly dangerous game, though, for the SS guards were ubiquitous, and they kept a close watch on this newly acquired property, which henceforth belonged to the Third Reich. Needless to say, they kept an especially close watch on the gold and jewelry. At first, I didn't understand how, from a judicial or moral point of view, the Sonderkommando could bring themselves to pocket the gold. But a few days later, once I had a better grasp of the situation, I was inclined to agree that it was indeed the Sonderkommando who should, if anybody should, be considered the sole heirs and legal proprietors of the treasures which fortune had brought their way. The men of the Sonderkommando also turned their gold over to be smelted. Despite the strictest supervision, there were always ways of getting it to the goldsmiths and of retrieving it in the form of 140-gram coins. But putting this gold to work, that is, exchanging it for useful goods, was a more difficult job. No one dreamed of hoarding the gold, for he knew that in 4 months' time, he would be dead. But for us, 4 months was a very long time. To be condemned to death, and yet forced to perform jobs such as we had to perform day after day, was enough to break the body and soul of the strongest among us, and to drive many to the brink of insanity. It was thus necessary to make life easier, more bearable, even for a few weeks' time. With gold, you could do that, even in the crematoriums. Thus was born in the days of the first Sonderkommando, a unit of exchange, the 140-gram cylinder. And my interjection, I feel flooded, I felt flooded when I typed that, attempting to take in the indomitable human spirit and to contemplate our power and grace, and that anyone, any tribe could consider us waste.